You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You all know that I love a little econ talk, especially when it is so important to each and every one of us and the bottom line for the middle class. Remember the number 51 trillion? We're working on buttons. They'll be here soon. 51 trillion, the amount of money that has been stolen from the bottom 90% by the top 1% since 1981. The big brutal bill, Donald Trump's tariff terror, all making it worse. But we got some interesting economic news today, and I'm very happy to be joined by Bharat Ramamurthy, Senior Advisor for Economic Strategy at the American Economic Liberties Project and former Deputy Director at Biden's National Economic Council. Welcome back to the show. We spoke last probably way back in October. Appreciate you making time, Bharat. Here, the Bureau of Labor Statistics put out the Consumer Price Index report for last month. That's the CPI. If you're not a nerd like Bharat and I are, that's basically an inflationary measure. And inflation looked to be holding steady in May. Thank goodness, I'll say that. And of course, what occurred then was a bunch of spiking of footballs and celebrations all over Fox Business and Fox News saying, see, nothing to worry about the tariffs here. Is it that simple, Bharat?
No. So you're totally right that the report from last month was cooler than expected, as we would say, yes. Meaning that inflation had risen less than people projected it to. Its prices still went up as they do, but they went up less quickly than people were anticipating. So that's good news. Generally speaking, when you have lower inflation, not only does that mean people are paying lower, facing lower price increases, but it's also often a cue for the Federal Reserve to start cutting interest rates, which is another key way of stimulating the economy. The thing here, and the thing that is making it complicated for the Fed, is that the full weight of the Trump tariffs have not filtered their way down into the economy yet. And that may seem surprising to people because it feels like a long time ago that Trump announced that he was going to do these tariffs. But of course, that was quickly followed by a variety of pauses and delays. And then there was a court case that stated, all of which is to say, we are now just entering the period in which the tariffs are actually going to start biting, and importers are going to be facing higher costs for bringing goods into the United States. And then again, it will take an additional amount of time for those higher costs for importers to then filter down into higher prices for consumers showing up in the inflation report. So my projection would be that those price increases will be coming in the second half of the year.
Second half of the year. And just some additional color on what our special guest this afternoon, Bharat Ramamurthy, shared with us. That on again, off again of the tariffs, both the Trump taco effect, where he just chickens out when things start to get really bad and all the billionaires call him and say, hey, you're costing me money. There's that. There was also, again, a trial court decision that said Donald Trump's trumped up economic, quote, emergency was no such thing. He can't do the tariffs because he doesn't have those emergency powers. That then got put on pause by a federal appeals court. And today the Supreme Court kept that pause in place. Those are all interim decisions with much more to come in the litigation sphere. Again, adding to the uncertainty. And Bharat, I just wanted to ask this. I have no idea what the point of any of this tariff terror is. I have yet to hear a single cogent pod administration. I watch Scott Bessent twist himself into pretzels on various shows because he's not an idiot. I hear Howard Lutnick, the Secretary of Commerce, say all kinds of nonsense because he is an idiot and has absolutely no economic literacy whatsoever. But where are we going? What has been the point of all of this? And if we don't know what the point is, where does the uncertainty end? Because what the market's like, what the stock market likes, what business owners like, and what consumers like on the aggregate is stability and some level of predictability. And we've got absolutely the opposite of that. And I don't know how any of this gets unwound. And of course, folks, we'll talk about whether or not there actually is a China deal. Hint, there's not. But step, because I literally have no idea.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on the key point here, which is that depending on the day, honestly, depending on the hour, the rationale for the tariffs changes. You know, when they were first announced, some of them were on Canada and Mexico, and Trump and his team were saying that this is going across the border. It's about securing cooperation from those border countries to stop those inflows. So not a trade-based rationale. And then, you know, with other countries, it was they have very high tariffs, but then he would impose tariffs on countries that don't have high tariffs. So it was all internally contradictory. And as you said, if you are in the business community and you're trying to plan for the second half of this year for next year, and obviously a big factor is how expensive are the things that I need to import that I'm then going to use to either sell directly to Americans, or I use it to manufacture some other larger product that I sell to Americans. How much are those things going to cost? And your cost could be 10%, 20%, 30% higher, depending on the day. And there's no clear explanation for, okay, in 3 months they're going to come down, or in 6 months they're going to come down, or I know that they'll come down as long as country X agrees to the following set of conditions.
Yeah, we hit this goalpost, then they'll come down. There's no objective, so it makes planning for business owners very difficult, if not impossible, if they've got supply chains that rely on imports or they themselves rely on exporting their finished product goods. Is that a fair?
I think it hurts in two different ways. So number one, the uncertainty about tariffs means that if you are a business that is importing items that you sell to Americans, or again, intermediate goods that you then use to produce other goods that you sell, you sort of have to raise your prices in order to account for the fact that there are going to be higher tariffs. And even if there are down ultimately in July or August or September, strikes down some of these tariffs, there are other legal authorities that Trump can use to impose other forms of tariffs. So you're not sure, you're basically going to be in a position where you have to preemptively be raising prices to account for the fact that some of the things that you're importing are going to go up. And it's not clear what would give you enough certainty to say, I'm going to bring those prices back down. The other big thing is all of this, supposedly, is to promote more investment in American manufacturing.
Right.
if you want to avoid these tariffs, make it in America. That's a thing that I support. But again, imagine if you are an investor and you're sitting on a pile of money and you're deciding whether to make an investment in a new factory in the United States. And as of today, there is a tariff on, I don't know, washing machines that are imported into the United States. And you say, you know what? Because imported washing machines are more expensive, that means that American-made washing machines are going to be a better deal. So I might invest in an American washing machine manufacturing. But you can't just snap your fingers and start manufacturing American washing machines. It's a multi-year, multi-million dollar investment that you're making. And it could get back in 6 months or a year. How are you going to go ahead and make a multi-million dollar five-year commitment to build in America? You can't.
You won't.
Because all
yeah.
of a sudden the economics change. So that's why you've seen it in all the data that there has been a freeze in investment. Rather than seeing an increase in investment, like
it's
you
doing
saw
the opposite.
In the last administration, there's been a complete pullback where people who have been making plans to invest in American manufacturing are stopping that because they're saying the uncertainty makes it impossible for me to project what my costs are going to be, and I can't make an investment under these conditions.
And to be fair, I've heard many business owners say, listen, if I had to reestablish manufacturing in the United States, that's going to take a long time because I can't pay U.S. going labor rates. So I'd be looking to automate different processes. I mean, there's all of this multi-year process. None of this is bringing manufacturing back to the United States. It certainly is at best a square peg in a round hole when it comes to border security and fentanyl. Let's talk for a minute. Folks, if you're just joining us, I am joined this half hour by Bharat Ramamurthy. He's the Senior Advisor for Economic Strategy at the American Economic Liberties Council Project, and the Deputy Director at Biden's National Economic Council. So I'm a member of the media, Bharat, but sometimes I get so very angry because nearly every account that I have read about Donald Trump's announcement of some sort of progress with China, I think is basically inadequate because if I remember correctly, there's nothing new at all. It's an agreement to revert to their other agreement, which was an agreement to agree and a pause basically on escalating the trade war. I want to make sure if me slamming through all the news today and reading as much as I could, if that's accurate, they paused the escalation back in Geneva a number of months ago. And the Geneva agreement, again, was a pause plus a yes, we'll continue negotiating and here are some general pillars of the negotiation. That's all Lutnick got in London with the Chinese. We'll agree to abide by that other agreement that was an agreement to agree. Or did I misread that?
No, I think that's accurate and well said. It's basically it's like one of those Russian nesting dolls where each time you open one of them, it's just a smaller plan to keep negotiating, but there's no actual substance there. And it's important to, if you just take a step back and say, are the tariffs between China and the United States higher today than they were when Donald Trump came into office? The answer is yes, in both directions. The tariff on the things that Americans import from China and the tariff on things that we export to China, a lot of which is agricultural products. So farmers who are
in
growing
Wisconsin.
Soybeans and other goods, China's a big market for those. And if the Chinese tariffs are 30-40%, what's happened in the past, what happened honestly during Trump's term, is that when those tariffs are put in place, if you put yourself in the Chinese purchasers who are saying, if I have to buy these goods, these soybeans from America, I'm paying 50% more than I was before. Well, I'm going to look elsewhere to buy those soybeans.
Yeah.
And the sad truth is that once those purchasers abroad make a switch, it's hard to get them back.
Yeah, the relationship. Once that relationship, those shipping channels are reestablished with another supplier, they may be gone forever, maybe not able to be undone. I'm going to talk about this cascading, exponentially increasing impact of all of the Trump chaos and Trump terror when it comes to the economy, because it's not about one thing. It's about all of these things together and how they ultimately will pinch and exploit the middle class for no particular good gosh darn reason. Keep it locked. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to Civic Media Radio with more.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're not going to want to go anywhere. We got some really eyebrow shocking, disappointing news. Oh, were that it not the same every day. We've got some breaking news that after the bottom of the hour break, as we come to the show with us from the American Economic Liberties Project. And I was supposed to be asking him about the trickle down or the impacts, the domino effect of the big brutal bill on the middle class. And we had so much economic news about the macro economy, I got distracted and forgot all about that. So thank you, everybody, for your patience. To summarize what we talked about in the first block here, basically, there is no China deal. It's just a prior agreement. Yes, inflation was cool in May, but all of these different factors, the knock-on impacts, if you will, of the chaos, of the uncertainty, of the big brutal bill, are going to start literally snowballing. And so as Bharat has explained to us, we're not really feeling the impacts of the chaos that Donald Trump has fomented. And unlike COVID, this was an unforced error. Any and all of the pain that you feel, the fact that prices aren't really coming down hardly at all, depending on what you're talking about, all of that responsibility lays entirely and exclusively at the feet of Donald Trump. Our economy will be creakier if you will, like less robust if and when we actually can peel back some of these tariff levels. As it stands, we're looking at some of the highest average tariffs, arguably the early 1900s, depending on how you're calculating them. So, my friend, please help us stitch together how the big, brutal bill is going to make things worse on every freckly, but also fundamentally weaken our.
Yeah, I was saying to somebody earlier today, this is a nation of three or four individually highly unpopular end of the economy to one their bill. It's like, you know, the Volcan of, you know, I think with Medicare, it's insurance, low-income families rely on middle-income families, people with disabilities. And this bill will, according to expert projections, kick about 10 million people off of Medicaid.
And on the low end, on the low end, right?
On low end. Yep. And that's right. And by failing to extend other tax provisions that made it easier for people to buy insurance on the, you know, Affordable Care Act exchanges, another 3 or 4 million people are likely to lose access to health insurance because of those changes. So conservatively, 13, 14 million people losing health insurance. Now, you might say, why do that? Well, it's because the Republicans have been desperately looking for ways to at least partially offset the cost of doing massive tax cuts for rich people. And what they have landed on is cutting hundreds and billions of dollars out of the Medicaid program by kicking people off of their health insurance saves the government money because they are not helping cover people's health insurance. And they're then funneling that those savings into tax cuts for the rich. And just to underline how significant those tax cuts are, the average person in the top 0.1%, the top 0.1%, will receive an annual tax cut of $450,000 a year. Okay, so $450,000 a year annual tax cuts for the super wealthy. Meanwhile, lower income, middle income people lose their health insurance. And then you might say, okay, it sounds like that's horrendous, cutting health insurance to pay for tax cuts, at least in one case for the other. No, that's not. Tax cuts are so big and so generous to families that the bill overall still raises the debt by about $3 trillion. Okay, so if you don't like debt and deficits, for you, if you like people losing health insurance, this isn't the bill for you. You don't like big tax cuts for the wealthy on top of the previous tax cuts for the wealthy, this bill isn't for you. They're really not exaggerating. There's harm in this bill for the economy now. It's going to lead to bigger deficits over the long term. It's going to make our inflation more unsustainable. It's going to put pressure on Medicare and Social Security going forward because we'll have less money coming in. And it's going to be really damaging to the well-being of all these folks who rely on Medicaid for health insurance.
It's just shocking to me. The only people who reasonably support the bill, in my opinion, are the top 10%. And even doesn't hold water because no billionaire ever met gives about a half a mil. And very, it's action as well. I don't understand why conservatives, especially deficit hawk conservatives, are lining up behind this. What do you place the odds? What are you hearing from other folks watching the brutal bill, watching the process, a couple of passing, some between the Senate and the House versions? Do you think that the in large part, the strokes of what we're going to end up with in the end?
More likely than not, when these things, it's kind of hard to get them off track. That said, a poll came out today showing that this has about 25% approval and 53% disapproval already. And the more unpopularity it gains, maybe some of those swing district folks start to walk away from it. So don't give up. Keep fighting against it. Keep let people know what's going on. And it's not too late. Remember what happened with the Affordable Care Act in 2017. Stop that with one no vote in the Senate.
Thank you, Senator McCain. And thank you, Bharat Ramamurthy, Senior Advisor for Economic Strategy at the Economic Liberties Project. I'll be back with breaking news and your calls next on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. Welcome back, everybody. Happy Wednesday afternoon. Hope your hump day went well and that you are on the way home from work. And sad to say, Brian Wilson's work on this planet has concluded. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys passing away today at the age of 82. Is there anybody that has grown up in this country that like hasn't heard basically huge portions of the Beach Boys catalog? It's sort of just woven into the fabric of our country. I promised to break some news this afternoon with you all, and indeed, there is caboodles of it, as there always is. Let's start with the grotesque, much of it grotesque, I should say. You remember RFK firing all of the people on the vaccine advisory board? Just like, phew, there one day, gone the next, all 17 of them, gone. Well, he's starting to select some other experts, air quotes, I don't know, experts, perhaps. One of them, of course, is a COVID vaccine skeptic. I'm sure this is going to go really well for public health. Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And this, I find this interesting. Rand Paul today sharing that he has been disinvited. Yes, disinvited from the White House picnic tomorrow, which is this bipartisan event that presidents have done for a long, long time. Obviously, Rand Paul has been extremely critical of the brutal bill. And yeah, a little bit more petty vindictiveness, in Rand Paul's words, from the Trump administration. Perhaps that petty vindictiveness is why the billionaire bros have at least apparently sort of made up Donald Trump and Elon Musk patching things up. Apparently J.D. Vance brokering the Trump-Musk peace accords, I guess, over the weekend. At least that's what the reporting is. Again, I don't give any credit where it's not due. And Musk and Trump deserve no credit. And let's be clear, it is absolutely in Elon Musk's bank account's best interest to try to patch things up with the Orange Man. So I just sort of watched this space. He deleted, this is what I thought was interesting, he didn't delete all of his tweets from the Trump-Musk feud. He deleted the ones about Epstein. Fascinating, isn't it? Not quite sure what to make of all that. 855-752-4842. Here's what I want to spend some time on this afternoon. And that is what I am going to say, this incredibly scary prospect that we could literally be staring down the barrel of another Kent State. The deployment of Marines, which according to reporting I read today, Marines not yet on the ground, not yet deployed in Los Angeles, but likely will be by tomorrow. Donald Trump calling up another thousands, I'm not sure exactly how many thousand, 2,000 reports are varied, of National Guard troops. Mayor Bass, the Los Angeles mayor, put in place a curfew last night. And here's what's worthy of note. If you have not been to the City of Angels, and I have been, it is freaking enormous. You can't, your brain almost can't get around how big Los Angeles is, okay? And this is incredibly important to understand, that there is absolutely no need for either the National Guard or the Marines to be anywhere in Los Angeles. And I'm going to get to some of the technical reasons about that, but zero need, okay? Los Angeles is 500 square miles. It's huge, okay? Huge. The curfew and the area, the zone of interest, is 1 square mile. Okay? How many LAPD responding? Somewhere north of 5,000. Their force, total LAPD force, is upwards of 9,000. Total number of protesters, it varies from day to day. Less than 2,000. Some say less than 1,000. So you got, let's just say, let's call it 2,000 protesters. Let's make some assumptions. 2,000 protesters. Let's say we'll just take a fraction of the LA police force. The 2,000 on shift, on duty LA police, 3,000 maybe. I mean, what are we talking about? It's this is ridiculous. Los Angeles County District Attorney today, 99.9% of protesters have committed no crime. And I'm going to say this, the ones that are committing crimes, they ain't protesters. There might be like three of those folks. And anybody that protests and fails to follow the law, fails to respect property, should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Because protest in this country, in the face of authoritarianism, in the face of oppression, has to be peaceful to ultimately break through and be successful. Donald Trump knows this. And so he has every incentive. Just look at the incentives, people. I'm an economist. I'm always thinking about what are the incentives? Why do they want to do it this way? Donald Trump has, and the MAGA regime have every incentive to do everything not to de-escalate what they swore an oath to do, to try to protect and serve the public, to promote public health, safety, and wellness. No. They're not trying to de-escalate. They're not trying to keep federal buildings and ICE officers safe. No, the reason that they're doing this, which Mark Milley, Mark Esper, like you talk to any retired general, they'll say the Guard is a last resort and active duty Marines shouldn't be anywhere near this. He's doing this to escalate it. He's doing this to beget more violence. He's doing this to incite it. So you got to go back to your grassroots organizing playbook. And that is, when someone is trying to goad you into a fight, don't take the bait. We're there to have the fight with our words, not our fists, with our objections, and not our lawlessness. And are these fair rules? Hell no. But movement has never been a fair fight. Movements require the vast majority of Americans of good faith to stand up. Our movement is in the many of us, not in the lawless few. And to fight lawlessness, we must remain lawful. To put this into perspective, there are more troops now being deployed, if you count the Marines, being deployed in the city of Los Angeles than in Iraq and Syria together. Okay, let's just all sit with that for a second. I'm going to say it again. More troops deployed or being deployed in the city of Los Angeles for a 1 square mile area than in the entirety of Iraq and Syria. 4,800 troops deployed or being deployed versus 4,000 total across Iraq and Syria. This gets to the actual point. What American interests aren't being supported by those troops? What person do you know that signed up to join our all-volunteer military and said, what I want to do is stare down protesters exercising their First Amendment rights? What I want to do is the job of police by arresting, subduing my fellow citizens. So take your American flags to your protests. I can't even count the total number of them. I guess 50 across the state of Wisconsin. Take your signs. Take your American flags to the protests on Saturday. But remain lawful. Remain peaceful. Words are our weapons. That is how we fight back against a lawless authoritarian. Period. Full stop. That is the only way this fight is ever won. Trump's address at Fort Bragg yesterday, disgusting, absolutely disgusting. It's basically like every time I read more coverage about it, I get more enraged. And here's some recent polling. I believe this Quinnipiac just finished a poll. Check this out. Only 15% of Americans support deporting people who are here illegally but have a job. 15%. That's no mandate. Only 14% of Americans support deporting people who are here illegally but who have citizen children. Only 9% of Americans support deporting people here illegally who were brought here themselves as children. And this one is mind blower here. Only, this is Quinnipiac polls, 5% of Americans, 5% of Americans. I'm going to call that a rounding error. It's not. But with the plus minus percentages, it might as well be zero. 5% of Americans support deporting people who are married to U.S. citizens. Because as we've talked about with various immigration experts, there is no path to citizenship. If you're here illegally, you're screwed. You'll pay your taxes. But you, in this administration, have no due process rights, apparently. And one of the things that I want to point out at base, which I think is essential, is this. To the degree that a handful or a few handfuls of protesters are incited into violence and lawlessness by Donald Trump, they didn't go there planning that. Protesters come there peacefully to exercise their First Amendment rights. But when ICE agents are ripping kids away from their parents, when militarized forces of the state, of the government, beat and kick the butts of American citizens, someone did plan that. Someone is doing that intentionally. Someone is making us less safe every single day. And that person is Donald J. Trump. When we come back, I turn the page. It's time for Over the Hump and Trump. Got to give you something to go off into this beautiful Wednesday afternoon that's on the positive side. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Just an aside, yet another disgraced politician making a comeback. Only this time it's Andrew Cuomo. Apparently he's leading in the New York City mayoral polls. Remember this guy? Resigned the New York State governorship because of various sexual allegations. Can we not do any better? Jeez. Maya Wiley, run for New York City mayor again. You're amazing. We could use a little different. But I worked with a Cuomo at my law firm. And I just want to tell you this because it's a little hot goss. Sometimes I digress a little bit. Little hot goss in one of the Cuomos. I felt very badly for my colleague, but this particular Cuomo failed the bar exam and they had to suspend her. Very embarrassing. Anyways, just I don't like the political dynasty thing. It's just not my bag. I don't like the disgraced former male middle-aged white dude politicians with long histories of sexual allegations having political comebacks. I just like, we can do better. We should do better. We deserve better. Another bit of fun. Maybe not another. A laughable moment this afternoon in all of the chaos. So you may be aware that Gavin Newsom, governor of California, filed a lawsuit yesterday to stop the use of the National Guard troops. He asked for a temporary restraining order. Well, the government responded today. I went and got it. If you're watching on YouTube, Civic Media YouTube channel, okay, went and got it. And I did not have to go past the first three pages to be able to prove to you, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, that the Trump administration, especially its Department of Justice, there are some good folks left over, I'm sure, but at least at the heads, the helms of some of these offices, not what I'd call the best of the best, because, okay, here's page one if you're looking, watching on YouTube or at Maggie Dawn Show on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Page one looks normal. Page two, you don't even need to look at it because I'll describe it for you. It's the table of contents. Very typical. Here is the table of contents. It's a blank page. I kid you not. They didn't do it. Oops. Bunch of crackerjack lawyers over there. Good on the proofreading. And on page three, the table of authorities, you know, the place where lawyers list all of the case law and statutes that support their arguments. It's blank, ladies and gentlemen. Also blank. No authorities. And there's actually a little bracket that says insert. It's highlighted. Apparently, they did forgot the table of contents and the table of authorities in their filing this afternoon. I just thought I'd share that with you because it amused me. All right, so here's the over the hump in Trump for this Wednesday afternoon. First, I want to say thanks to each and every one of you for listening, and thanks to Jamie and Jacob and Dan Schaefer and Angela Lang and Matt Rothschild, who helped keep the Maggie Dawn Show going yesterday. And I want to share with you what I was doing. I was helping support a youth arts initiative based in Milwaukee. I was guest bartending at the Pfister. It was a bunch of fun. But here's the over the hump and Trump thing that I want to give to you. I had a few many moments, many minutes strung together yesterday with folks that I was just meeting, but all folks that were there to do good things, who are in community, who are in the movement to move our nation closer to its highest principles, values, and ideals, that want more justice, not less, that want more humanity and dignity, not less, that want less cruelty and more comfort in this world. And I got to tell you, boy, did I need that. So if you have not been recently in a room with others where you are just being in community with one another, supporting one another, yeah, we talk some politics, but mostly we're just trying to be there having a nice time with one another. I got to tell you, that was quite a salve for my wounded soul these days. So I want to encourage everybody, call up somebody that you know has got some alignment, maybe get together with some friends, maybe put politics on the shelf. We all know it's there. It's omnipresent. It is every day. It is relentless. It comes at such a fast clip. But get together with people that you trust, believe in more comfort, more dignity, more humanity, more justice, more equity in this world, and just spend some time together and support each other that way. Because again, trying to find those moments of joy, those moments of togetherness, that is the only way we're going to get through this fight, because the fight then happens every day. But you need those moments of safety and respite where you don't have to fight. I know I do. I never realized how hard this job was going to be. I love it. I consider this a blessing. I get to spend time with each and every one of you. It is so much fun, but it is also grueling. So we all need those moments of safety and respite together with one another. and preferably where we don't pick up the bait to, yes, talk about politics and how terrible everything is, because that kind of, yeah, that kind of ruins the vibe if you're trying to just have a moment of togetherness and some relaxation and some safety. And that brings me again to what I hope for everyone, especially all of you that are planning on going to the No Kings protests, some near 50 this weekend. Please be safe. Follow the directions of law enforcement. Be peaceful, because that's how we win this fight. That's going to do it for me this afternoon. We got a jam-packed show tomorrow again as we try to bring you every day. Got to always say thank you to Jamie for all that support. We've got another word of the hour tomorrow for you. We got Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to talk about badger care. We got Urban Milwaukee coming in. Don't miss any of it. I'll be back tomorrow. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.